If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Hey y'all, this is Josiah Gray, and this is Half Street High Heat. Hope you enjoy today's episode.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Half Street High Heat, episode 192 of this lovely podcast. I am joined by just Amanda tonight as Ryan is taking the night off, and the Nats themselves got an unexpected off day due to the weather, so they will be playing a doubleheader tomorrow, or today if you're listening to this on release day. But I am joined by Amanda. You can follow her on Twitter at awhite7877. You can follow myself, change my handle at thecoachmoose. Found a better one, liked it better, changed it, no big deal. And the show at Half Street High Heat. And Ryan, if you miss him so much like we do, at We Are All Shaq. Amanda, what's going on?
Not too much. A weather rain out tonight for the, well, snow here where I am in Winchester. We got three inches.
That's absurd.
3 inches of snow out here today. It snowed like hard, fat snowflakes for hours this afternoon. I couldn't believe it. I'm so bitter. Nobody wants to hear about me spending the afternoon looking at charts for how cold it can be before it hurts my peach and pear blossoms, but that's what I did. And I'm pretty upset about it. Other than that, was good. Easter was fun. Everybody's doing well. I wish baseball would come on back. I guess we get 2 tomorrow, but I won't be able to watch the day game most likely.
I love day games during the week. I mean, it's a product of working from home, so I can just throw it on. But I understand that's not the case for everyone. And, you know, if I wasn't able to work from home, I would hate day games. So I understand it, but sucks for y'all. Like, I'm going to enjoy some daytime baseball tomorrow.
I know. I'm going to try to get back in time to get some of it, but I have appointments. So we'll see. I'll probably listen on the radio like I do to most of the games during the day. So how was your Easter?
Oh, we didn't do anything. We're moving soon. So it's just all packing and, you know, trying to prep for that. So nothing exciting here.
No eggs for you. No chocolate.
No, I'm good. I'm not going to continue that sentence because I don't. Don't
want to disparage myself Easter,
in right? Hot water. Ooh, see this maturity on this podcast.
And look at you, prospect demonstrating maturity right here in front
of us. Prospect development. God. But no, I was listening to Charlie and Dave. It was during the Brave series. Just I happened to be out, you know, driving when the game was on, which isn't normally the case because I've actually gotten pretty lucky. I've been able to watch most of the games so far. But man, they're not that I'm like breaking news to anyone. Everyone knows Charlie and Dave are fantastic, but it had been a while since I listened to them because, again, if I am able to, you know, take in the game, I'm usually watching it, right? And all that stuff, and I'm not typically driving. And granted, you can do it through the app too. Like you can listen to Charlie and Dave through the app, the MLB app. But because I'm streaming the game, I can never get it to sync up. So I usually, well, up until this year, obviously with Kevin Franson coming aboard, I usually just bit the bullet and listen to the Masson audio. Granted, now you have to bite the bullet and listen to the Masson audio for, you know, other reasons besides the who's in the booth with all the technical issues they're having. But back to my initial story, just listening to Charlie and Dave again, I was like, man, they're so good.
Like, and I know it's well established how much of a homer I am for everything Mass, but they truly are some of the best because I sometimes just will listen, like if there's not a Nats game on and I'm in the car, I'll just turn on MLB Network Radio and listen, you know, to other, you know, to other broadcast teams and stuff. And Charlie and Dave truly are fantastic.
And they play off each other so well, like just a little peek behind the curtains of Half Street High Heat, like, you know, Ryan's not here, but myself, Ryan and Amanda, we always try to think of ways to, you know, build that chemistry. And so we're not talking over each other or, you know, have our phones going off in the background or, you know, stuff like that. But then you listen to Charlie and Dave, where you're just like,
it's so good. They have such natural chemistry and they've like, been together goddamn. For so long. Yeah. They do.
It's like, goddamn, no wonder we're the amateur podcasters and they're, you know, on the radio for 14 years straight or however long it's, I mean, they might have been there since the beginning.
I think so.
So what, 17 years and counting?
Yeah.
That's impressive, man.
They're so good. I remember when I was a kid, I used to not be able to watch the games all the time. And obviously it was Orioles then because there were no Nats around. Right. But I just remember I fell in love with listening to baseball games on the radio and listening.
17 years ago, weren't you still an adult?
Yes, son. I was. But yeah, I already had two kids 17 years ago. So that's cool. Anyway, no, I used to listen on the radio when I was a kid. And just, I always loved the way they like painted the picture for you of, you know, like they're wearing this jersey with the, you know, the orange stripes and the black hat. And they would just like paint the picture for you or tell you about the weather. And it was just like, you could see it in your head. And I feel like that's something that Charlie and Dave can do too. They just make you feel like you're at the game. And I love it. I really do enjoy. I prefer to watch the game on TV if I can, just because it's nice to be able to see what's happening. But if you have to listen on the radio, you could do a hell of a lot worse.
I remember what it was. It was not during the Brave series. It was during the Pirate series. They were talking about the Roberto Clemente Bridge and how it's under construction. Cause I guess it's common for fans at Pirates games to park across the bridge, you know, in town somewhere. I don't know Pittsburgh all that well, so I apologize if anyone's yelling at their phone right now. But they would park in town and then cross the bridge into the stadium. If you haven't been to Pittsburgh and PNC Park, it's phenomenal. I mean, just the absolute beauty of a ballpark and ballpark layout. But that's typically what fans did. But I think it was a couple months ago, not near PNC Park, but in Pittsburgh, there was a bridge collapse. So I think there's a concerted effort to renovate the bridges and make sure they're all good and all that stuff. But anyways, Roberto Clemente Bridge under renovations and repair. So they were talking about that. And I mean, that in and of itself is not interesting, but just hearing Charlie and Dave talk about it was like, I am so fascinated with what's going on.
They can make anything interesting. Yeah.
Even like, the Nats currently. All in on this freaking bridge, like get it fixed now. Like
this is a travesty. Like, I'm so upset. Yeah.
I was like, for those 7 Pirates fans in attendance, this is an outrage. Oh man. But no, they're excellent. And again, not that we're breaking any news, but I just got a good I guess, reappreciation of Charlie and Dave, because man, they're fantastic.
So agreed.
I hope they are locked in for lifetime deals at the very, very least.
We're not letting them go.
Right. But even Bob and F. Bob and Franny. I don't really like the name Franny either.
Wonder how he feels about it.
Yeah, we'll have to ask him. Again, another little sneak peek behind the curtain. Obviously, you know, our long-term fans have known we have had Kevin Franson on the podcast before. We are trying to get him again, but due to the fact there was the lockout, so he was kind of contractually not allowed to speak, or he just didn't want to like put himself in a tough spot, which we understand and respected. And then it was a quick start to the season, 17 games to open the year. So we just haven't been able to get, you know, on schedule, a similar schedule.
Yet, but we're working
on it. We're working on it, and he's obviously a really good guy. So we're hoping to have him back on the show soon. But I thought he's been doing a really good job, and he's been a topic of conversation that we haven't talked about on the show yet, and even really in the spaces. But I've seen, I think all of us have tweeted about it, and I've seen other people tweet about it. Kevin Franson keeps it real. And I think that's what we hated about FP, quite frankly. And you see all of the memes and tweets. It's like, if FP was commentating these games, he'd be like, oh, there's something special brewing when we're down 11-2 in the ninth. Like, it just stuff like that, that would rub you the wrong way. Whereas it's
homerism that put my homerism to shame.
Right. And Kevin Franson, you know, was in the league not too long ago. Like, he's been on some bad teams, and he just has a good perspective on it, and he keeps it real. Like, he was very mad at Fetty, who we will talk about, for just not attacking the strike zone and, you know, nibbling. When you look on Twitter, everyone's mad at Fetty for nibbling, and here's Kevin Franson saying what we're thinking, and it's just like, we can relate a little bit more. He's a little blunt and direct, especially in comparison to FP. And, you know, everyone knows how I feel about FP.
Right. But I think there are some fans who like the homerism, and for them, that might be a little bit, you know, of a shock to the system. But I think for people who are affiliated with the teams and are doing commentary, there's a really difficult and fine line to walk between, you know, giving real commentary and, you know, speaking your mind about what is and isn't going well for the team and who's doing well and who isn't, and, you know, not upsetting the apple cart too much, but also, you know, giving the fans a feeling of real commentary as opposed to just, you know, kind of parroting the party line, if that makes sense. And I think he's doing a really good job of it.
Right. Like, you can't be authentic if you don't speak on what's actually going on with the team. And that was one thing that was really tough to listen to with FP. It's just like, listen, I get sometimes you want to keep things positive. I mean, hell, we've tried positive vibes.
Positive vibes only. Attempted. It didn't last very long.
Episodes, like, we've tried. So I get that. But again, in order to be authentic, you need to really, you know, not report. They're not reporters, but you need to commentate on the state of the team. If someone's having a terrible game, like, for instance, I'll give you guys listening an example. Mykel Franco, who we will talk about as well.
Oof.
I mean, horrible, horrible game. I believe it was yesterday, Sunday, defensively.
It was the fourth game. Yeah.
Two errors in one play, bobbled the ball and then threw the ball away. And Franson kind of, you know, it wasn't overly harsh, but he let it know that just is unacceptable. That's the kind of stuff I like. It's not just, you know, directness and, you know, overly blunt for the sake of being blunt. It's, you know, just kind of holding people accountable. That's what I love. That's the kind of commentating I love. And you kind of see Bob adapting his style. Like, for a while there, at least me, I might be in the minority here, but I thought Bob was kind of washed too. Like, it seemed like he was just kind of falling into the same old patterns. And now you see Bob kind of like, he gives a couple little snarky comments there, and specifically with the whole Masson situation, because obviously the Nats, Bob and Franson and Orioles are not on the road with the team. They're the only teams, or the broadcast teams.
Masson sucks.
Right. They're the only broadcast teams in baseball not to be doing that. Like the Angels were there for a while, but the Angels had a terrible broadcast over the weekend. And Bally Sports is there. Bally Sports. I don't know how you pronounce it. Bally Sports kind of admitted they're like, all right, this was terrible. And now they're sending their crews on the road with the team. So now Masson is the final regional broadcast not to be sending its crews with the team.
And they had that game, was it game one or game two, where literally it just the picture even came out, and we were listening to not only the audio, but what sounded like the audio on a tinny video from 1964.
Yeah, so I didn't experience that because I streamed through MLB TV, and apparently the MLB TV stream was fine, but everyone watching through cable and Masson was screwed. So you heard Bob and Franson have to resort to more of a radio style broadcast, which was cool of them to do, but they shouldn't have to do something like that.
No, they should not have to do that.
So it's just, it has been very interesting to see not only the addition of Kevin Franson to the broadcast.
He's good with radio style broadcasts because he was just doing that for the Phillies.
But how that's, you know, shifted.
Bob.
Yeah, exactly. And I like it. Again, I see why it might be a little bit jarring going from, you know, one extreme to, I wouldn't call Franson, you know, the other extreme, but he's more
on that side. Extreme maybe isn't the right word, but like a totally opposite.
He's on the other side of the spectrum, style. For sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Definitely an opposite style from,
which is interesting because I think he and FP are buddies, like from my understanding they're good friends, so it's interesting.
I mean,
podcast styles are so entirely
I'm not gonna condemn him because of who he keeps company with, but I his style of broadcast, and you know, you guys listening, you know how we are on the show, like our style of podcasting is more in line with Kevin Franson's style of commentating. Like we keep it real, and maybe we're overly harsh and, you know, are not afraid to criticize when sometimes you just need to let it go. But again, our style matches up with Franson's style a little bit more. And I like it a lot. I'm having a good time actually listening to, you know, what they're saying. And again, like the Fetty situation, everyone was pissed because Fetty, you know, could be really effective.
Like that. Yeah.
He could be really effective. He just pitched a contact, but instead he's nibbling. And it's incredibly frustrating to watch. And so it was good to hear Franson, who, you know, clearly knows way more about baseball than we do, you know, echo that and just kind of let it be known that he shouldn't be doing that, especially with the lead. So it was cool to watch. And again, I'm having a good time hearing Kevin Franson and Bob, like give Bob all the credit in the world. Like he's a true pro having to adapt his style to his new broadcast partner. So I'm having a good time and it feels weird. I wish it wasn't Masson, but you know, yeah. I'm listening to them and
that's a whole different can of worms.
Yeah. So we're hoping to have Kevin Franson on soon. There's a couple scheduled off days, I should say, coming up in the next couple of weeks. So hopefully we can get together and connect with Kevin then, or Franny.
I'm gonna go with Kevin.
I was gonna say I don't think I have the balls.
I'm gonna go with Kevin.
Introduce him as Franny. We'll see. I don't know if we're at that level yet. But anyways, let's
maybe
get into the show.
Maybe a couple
more
times on the podcast before we can Franny.
Right, three times at the very least. Let's get into the show, Doc. We'll start with a quick pitch. Take it to the general MLB once again, as we like to do. Through nine, some teams are playing 10 games tonight if they're not rained out. Biggest frauds in the MLB. 10-game sample size, so you can't really judge accurately.
Yeah, but it's fun to
on
judge
that. But
in,
yeah,
anyway, for sure.
Who do you think is the biggest fraud in the MLB?
I might have to go Yankees on this one, just because they always.
I mean, Ryan did too. Credit where credit is due.
Yeah, it's they just always think they're going to go win the World Series every single year, and every single year, I feel like their weaknesses become apparent very early in the season. That doesn't mean they're going to wind up, you know, in third, or they're not going to make the playoffs, but I don't think they are who they think they are. So I will definitely put them high on my list. Philadelphia, who's, you know, they're going to be good, but I don't think they're going to be maybe winning the division good. I don't know. The Mets seem to be, at least so far, you know, the Mets are always going to Mets. But for right now, the Mets are kind of kicking ass. And Cincinnati, who's sitting at 2-8 right now, they weren't expected to be that good. So maybe putting them on the fraud list is not quite accurate, but I thought they'd be better than that. And again, small sample size, but if we're reacting after 9 or 10 games, that's my list.
I have two. The first one in the traditional sense of the word fraud is the Chicago Cubs. They're better than the Nats. Like, they're going to be the comparison for the Nats because they both were World Series winning teams. They both tore it down officially at the same time. And so they're, for all intents and purposes, on the same trajectory. Granted, the Nats have a generational talent like Juan Soto, and the Cubs don't have anyone like that, but they did make the moves. The Nats didn't. They signed Marcus Stroman and Seiya Suzuki both. Well, Suzuki especially
so fun to watch.
Has been awesome for them. So the Cubs are 5-4 right now. They're playing tonight. They are trying to get the score of that game. They're up 2-1 over Tampa. And 5-4 is like, if the Cubs finish with like 80 wins, I'd be like, okay, like that's fine. So I'm not gonna, you know, jump on the anti-Cubs bandwagon and say they're frauds like Ryan did last year with the San Francisco Giants, who might be frauds again this year. But
might that be. They're 7-2 right now, but
that rotation's very, very good. So I'm not entirely surprised. The Cubs are one that I will say it's fraud. That lineup's not very good. It's not very deep. But they're doing well so far. They made Milwaukee's pitching look pretty inferior, which is not the case. Milwaukee's pitching is actually quite good. So there's one. And in the inverse sense of the word, the Atlanta Braves. The Atlanta Braves are not a 455 team. They are much better than that.
Yeah.
Ryan touched on it last week or last episode. The early season Atlanta Braves are always like this. A lot of teams are like this early in the season.
They do tend to start slow.
Right. They don't have Ronald Acuna back, which is obviously a big deal. They've had a couple key guys with slow starts and whatnot. They'll be fine. But this is a team that's going to be very, very good. It's built to last, which you can't say for a lot of teams. They're only 5-6 right now, but they lost the series to the Nats. Which happened. That's why the Nats are better than the Braves, but the Braves are better than what they're showing right now. And they will be,
opposite fraud. Yeah.
Right. They will be a safe playoff team come that time, come September, October.
Like both of those. I'm still liking my Yankees pick since they lost to the Orioles 5-0 yesterday. I feel like that's a safe fraud pick.
Well, technically that was my pick because I had them missing the playoffs and you had them in the playoffs.
I still think they're going to make the playoffs, but we'll see. Happens.
Ryan had them beneath 500. So
we'll see. Maybe he's right. Yeah, if they're really frauds, then he'll be right.
Yeah. All right. Let's recap the Pirates series. As I'm sure you guys know, Nats dropped 3-4 to the Pirates, the lowly Pirates.
Yikes.
So the Nats are somehow better than the Braves, but worse than the Pirates. Like, make that make sense.
It's an enigma.
Right. Game one, this was a kind of disappointing loss. Yoana Don got the start. I think we all kind of had high hopes for him coming off I believe he got tagged with the loss against the Mets, but it was, a promising start. And the same issue that's plagued Nats pitchers forever now. It seems like through 10 games, nine
couldn't
games.
Couldn't get through the fifth.
Couldn't get through the fifth.
He did get the loss in that. I just checked.
Yeah. So his ERA is inflated. It's sitting at 10 right now. So everyone's overreacting, which sucks because, it's fair to an extent, but it sucks because, we're clamoring for these young guys to play. But if we do that, we also can't, deem them as AAA players or, as some like to say, quadruple A players that are playing at the major league level.
I mean, we can. We just probably
Can, but it's just like it doesn't work both ways.
It doesn't. You can't have it. If you want them to play the young guys, you're going to have to suffer through the slings and arrows of young players figuring it out.
Right. So for me, the I have a couple of silver linings on his start, and I'm just going to touch on the pitching for the most part throughout the series, and I'll let you touch on some of the other storylines.
Okay.
For me, the promising thing with his start, if I'm trying to find silver linings, are twofold. His blow-up inning was in the fourth inning. He allowed four runs. Mm-hmm. Comes back in the fourth. His blow-up inning was in the third inning. I don't know if I misspoke there, but comes back in the fourth, no earned runs, or no runs allowed at all. So he didn't let what was bad get worse, which we've seen guys like Patrick Corbin, who's supposed to be this team's ace, allow that to happen. And this is a, 23-year-old guy, I believe. So a young guy, only his third major league start. It easily could have gotten out of hand. And yes, he was tagged with the loss, but after a four-run inning down 5-3 in the game, you know, your team gets you an early 3-0 lead and you squander it, like that can tend to unravel. But
yeah, and the fact that he was able to rein it in and get himself back under control.
Right. He comes back, scoreless inning, and then goes back out there for the fifth, gets allows another run. Davey pulls him, but there was that at least attempt to grit out the start and save the bullpen, which is what we're looking for. He was stretched out to 91 pitches, which is the second thing, because typically we see these guys get gassed or fold, you know, around the 70 pitch mark. And Adon was able to go to 91. Yes, he was tagged with the loss. Yes, he gave up six runs. But again, we're looking for silver linings. And right now, the biggest silver lining with his pitching staff is going deep into ball games, or at least attempting to, and not letting those, you know, early blow up innings affect them too much. So that's the thing I liked most about his start. Again, it was kind of a disappointing game coming off the Braves series, especially against the Pirates. But
yeah, we were all unrealistically high on the team after the Braves series, so that was a little come down. I also, if I can throw one more silver lining in there on a done start, was five strikeouts, which you know, you like to see from him. He's not exactly a guy known for high strikeouts, but you know, he only went less than five innings and he got five strikeouts. So, you know, the 91 pitches and the five strikeouts is, you know, a step in the right direction. Obviously, like you said, he took the loss. He gave up a lot of runs. It wasn't a terrific outing, but there were pieces of it that you can take away to say, okay, this is something that he can build on.
Yeah, absolutely. What about the lineup? Did you like anything there?
This was a game where Soto went 0-for-4, which is very unlike him. Bell had two hits in that game. You know, there wasn't a lot to like about the lineup in this game. I think the only other hits were Hernandez and Cruz with one each, but it was four hits for the whole game. So it was a pretty lousy offensive showing, but you know, it was one of those where if your pitcher is going to have a guy like that, like Adonon, who's young and not, you know, super reliable to keep the runs down, you really need your offense to show up, and they did not in this game.
Yeah, that is for certain. And then the bullpen didn't do great, but it was, as we have now deemed them, and it's probably not fair to them, they're probably all very nice guys, but we have deemed them the B team. So you got Hunter Harvey, Patrick Murphy, there's one other guy. I know you got Arano was the only one with the scoreless inning. Pulling it up really quick.
Oh, and I just misspoke. Andre, I'm going to interrupt you real quick. I forgot Yadiel Hernandez did have three hits in that game, so I will give him credit where credit is due on that.
Yeah, we'll talk about him throughout the rest of the series too. Andres Machado was also, so Harvey, Machado, Murphy, Arano. Again, Arano was good. Struck out three, gave up one hit, but struck out three. Hunter Harvey just got the last out of the inning when Adon came out, but he did allow a hit. So Machado and Murphy were not great, but it was more mop-up duty anyways. But moving on to game two, this was the lone good game in the series. You got the Eric Fetty start, and it looked like it was heading for trouble there. Two runs in the second. I believe, if I'm remembering correctly, it was like a 30-pitch second inning. So he was through – luckily, it was a quick first inning. So he was through two innings on like 40, 45 pitches. So it was quickly heading down, oh, no, another short start. And that's what it ended up being. He only went five, but two runs, six strikeouts, only two walks. And his, you know, he left the game with the lead. And then in the top of the sixth, we got two more insurance runs to take it from a 5-2 game to a 7-2 game. And that allowed Davey Martinez a little bit more flexibility to, you know, he still went to Sean Doolittle in the sixth because that was his plan, right? It was a 3-run game, you know, that's still a safe situation. So he was going to go with his quote unquote A team. So that Doolittle was already warming. So he went to Doolittle in the sixth, but then he goes to Austin Voth for the seventh. Again, we now have a 5-run lead and we all know the Austin Voth experience at this point. We're not going to dive too far into it. But Voth goes out. Yeah, Voth goes out there for the seventh and eighth. No hits, no walks, 2 strikeouts, 21 pitches through 2 innings. Like, that was phenomenal. Mm-hmm. So that was a huge performance for Voth. Hopefully that gets something going. Good on Davey Martinez for, you know, just shutting us all up and sticking with Voth. It turned out fine. And then he throws Espino out there for the ninth. Again, 5-run lead. Espino, 1 hit, but otherwise, no harm. It was fine. So that was the lone good game. But back to Fetty. Again, like I talked about with Adon, it could have gotten worse. He didn't let it. And unlike Adon, again, no shot against Adon, but Fetty was able to really settle down, get through at least 5, put himself in line for the win, and, you know, not give it any more runs. And he was stretched out to 96 pitches. So I'm, you know, saying all these pitch counts to show the workloads for these guys. And hopefully we're starting to see them stretched out and they can go deeper into games, but also not be gassed once they get to 70, 80 pitches as well. So good start by Fetty. And I mentioned this, I believe I tweeted this from the Half Street High Heat account. If Fetty develops into a guy, you know, this is his ceiling where it's just 5 to 6 innings of 2-3-4 run ball. You will absolutely take it. Like, he has a spot in every single team. Like, a 4-5 ERA is not pretty on paper, but it's valuable in like 26 of the 30 rotations in baseball. So it's like, if this is who he is, hell yeah. Like, this, yeah,
because it's better than I thought he was going to be at times, mm-hmm, over the past couple of years, for sure.
And his ERA is better than that right now. It's a 3.6, which is great, but 1.3 whip is pretty high. So it goes to show he's had some high stress innings early on this season. Hopefully he can knock those down. A large part of that is, like Kevin Franzen has been saying, he's been nibbling a lot when he should, mm-hmm, just be pitching to contact, especially when his team has a lead, as he did in this past, or in his past outing. So little maybe things, but confidence. we are seeing we'll some them. Development there. So that's, you know, good signs from Eric Fetty.
And but, that's what we're trying to do here. See good things in these, you know, your team sucks. There's no sugarcoating it, but
this was also the game where Hernandez, Soto, Cruz, Bell are 1-4. Yes. They had 8 hits in, mm-hmm, 6 of the 7 RBIs. So this was where
the order, not so much.
Right. Well, that's, you know, goes without saying. But this is the game where it's like, oh, if everything goes right, this is what our lineup does, mm-hmm, kind of thing.
But it was that same story of the top of the lineup coming through and the bottom of the lineup. Not, there was only 1 hit from the bottom of the lineup and it was from Lane Thomas. So of the 10 hits on the night, that was the only one that came from the bottom 3. So again,
well, and he's still, there was another hit that you're not talking about. The hit from the Pirates pitcher into Alcides Escobar's nuts on, uh-huh, the pickoff. That was a big hit. Yeah. Us guys know.
It didn't look like him.
Him falling to the ground while trying to call timeout was just like, I mean, I think every guy felt that. Like,
I know. My husband was like, I can't watch this.
That was tough. So pour one out for my homie. That was tough to watch. But
so anyway, I mean, that one ended well though. It was the one game that, you know, it felt Fetty labored early, but, you know, like you said, he settled in and then the game just felt like it was kind of cruising. But that didn't last through to the following game, unfortunately.
Yeah. And then games 3 and 4, kind of the same storyline at this point. Obviously, even after game 3, the Nats are still trying to split the series, which is well within their grasp. But games 3 and 4, it's just like they were hanging around. It could be anyone's game. And the Nats just kind of fall apart late. Josh Rogers goes game 3. He was okay. Not great. But again, if Josh Rogers is the Fetty type where 5 innings, maybe 6, 2-3-4 runs, you'll take that. He goes 4 1/3. He was, you know, doing well for most of the game and then kind of ran into trouble in that terrible 5th inning that just eludes all Nats pitchers. But you know, 4 1/3, 6 hits, 3 runs, 2 walks, 2 strikeouts, 76 pitches. Still fine. Like, again, not great, but still fine. C-Shack comes in, pitches an inning and 2/3, solid. Rano, solid. And this was the tea bag, also known as Kyle Finnegan blow-up game, gives up 2 and kind of just unravels from there. So that was game 3. And then game 4, you have the Corbin start, and I don't think anyone had high hopes.
Our ace on the mound.
He looked pretty good, like 5 1/3. So, you know, he got through the 5th, was going trying to go through the 6th, and then ran into some trouble. But his final stat line was still solid. 3 hits, 2 runs, 3 walks, 4 strikeouts, and 92 pitches. Like, he was solid. But then you have the Steve Cishek blow-up game late, where he gave up 3 runs in only a third of an inning. And, you know, it was
first blown lead of the season for the bullpen, which has been surprisingly better than, you know, I think anybody expected. But that was definitely Cishek. And I feel like Cishek's been used a lot lately. I know there are a couple of games where he stayed away from it, but I just feel like we're seeing a whole lot of Cishek right now.
I don't know. Like, I think that was his 4th appearance of the season.
Was it 4th or 5th?
Well, technically 5th because of the first one where he threw 1 pitch.
Well, that's an excellent point.
Yeah, so that might be it. But he's only pitched 4 innings on the season.
Yeah.
And, you know, basically 2 of those came in one outing. So, yeah, very similar storylines with game 3 and game 4. It's an unfortunate end to the series. You would have liked to have seen the Nats at least split the series. But the Pirates, bottom of the lineup, like, that's it's so stupid that we're talking about the bottom of the Pirates lineup.
I know.
In these games
being such a challenge for the Nats, it tells you everything you need to know.
But they're pesky. Like, in this is game 3 I'm looking at, if I'm not mistaken. Game 3, yes, because Rodgers was on the mound. Like, their lineup went 3-4-10, but that's still 300 average. They had 2 runs and 3 RBIs. Like, that's insanely, you know, important production to any ball game. Like, that's a ball game altering production, and the Nats are not getting anything remotely close to that. It looked like we were going to on Sunday. You saw Riley Adams check in with us for first hit of the season that led to an RBI. And then you saw Victor Robles check in with his first hit of the season that led to 2 RBIs. So you're like, holy shit. You know,
his batting average is 0.048. He's got a
hit. You're like, holy shit, the bottom of the lineup's doing something. And, you know, gets us the early lead. This was all in the second inning. You know, Adams and Robles being the production, and then nothing else came of it. So it's like, even when we got production from the bottom of the lineup.
Well, then the top of the lineup,
nothing.
Every single player had a hit in that game. Every Nats.
Except Hernandez and Soto.
Except Hernandez and Soto. So you're kind of like, okay, well, on the night when
Soto at least got on base.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And Hernandez has been doing a pretty good job of getting on, even if it's once to lead off the game. But
that's what I've been saying in the space is the problem with Hernandez is, you know, he was doing fine, but his on-base percentage is still not very high. Like, his on-base percentage is only a few ticks higher than his batting average, which tells you he's not walking at all, pretty much. So if he's not hitting like he did in game 4 of the series, then he's doing nothing. Like, he's not finding ways to get on base, which obviously a leadoff guy needs to do. And that's the only problem with a guy like him is, like, again, if he's not hitting, he's not doing anything for you.
Yeah. It seems like he gets that hit at the beginning of the game a lot, and then that's all.
Yeah. So, I mean,
much else from him. And his defense is leaving something to be desired.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
which is part of the story we should touch on for game 4, because there was some heinous defense in game 4.
Well, yeah, Michael Franco's terrible. He's come crashing back down to earth. Like, I understand he had a couple hits, and if you look at his season numbers, it still looks all right, but he is terrible defensively. Alcides Escobar stinks. And we'll kind of touch on that a little bit later when we talk about our old friend down in AAA. But, yeah, again, it's just that left side of the infield is – it's tough to watch. And even when they are producing, it's tough to watch because, you know, they shouldn't even be on the field, if we're being honest.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Yeah. So, but on the bright side, Josh Bell had a great series.
That's very true.
And I love Josh Bell.
Love revenge series too. I always enjoy that.
Yeah. So he had 5 hits in the series. a couple RBI, I think four RBIs, a couple runs, like had a pretty solid series, and he made a couple of nice defensive plays as well. And he has never been necessarily known for his glove and his defensive ability, but he made some nice plays. And it sucks because you the more he does well, the more I'm like, please extend him. But again, the more he does well, I'm like, oh, well, he's gone.
The higher the chances
he's gone. Yeah. Right. So it's very this tough curious. Conundrum.
It's a long way off, obviously, to the trade deadline, but I'm very curious to see what strategy the Nats are going to employ when it comes to the rebuild versus the restock of the farm. Like if you keep selling, you're extending your rebuild. And we've talked so much about, are they going to try to compete while Soto's still here? And I feel like this year, if they sell again at the deadline, they're not going to try to compete again while Soto's still here.
Yeah.
So Bell is a huge piece of that. So what they do with Josh Bell to me is kind of,
it's going to be the indicator,
the bellwether of what their strategy is going to be. You're welcome.
But a couple of other storylines before we move on and preview the Diamondback series. Through the seven games that we saw previously, it was pretty consistent. But then in the Pirate series, we kind of experienced some aspects of the game that we hadn't yet, particularly the bullpen blowing games when we're either tied or one run deficit or even have the lead. We had some bullpen blow ups, but also the bad defense. Generally, we had been playing pretty good defense through the first seven games, and then kind of just all fell apart. And a lot of that were, you know, on just a couple of the guys. But you kind of see where this could go wrong very quickly, you know, starting to happen. Hopefully they kind of, you know, patch up the holes and the deficiencies, but you can kind of see where this might go wrong very quickly if they're not careful.
Yeah. The weaknesses are definitely on display.
Yeah. But one weakness that has yet to show itself, if it is even a weakness at all, it very well may be a strength. I only say weakness because of, I guess, recent history and stats, but you know, I do need to put a little bit more respect on his name, and that's Sean Doolittle. He was
a legendary.
He continues to be lights out, and his velocity's back up. He's working in curveballs. He's doing everything that we would have wanted him to do in order to have a bounce back year. And, you know, it's showing. Through five appearances into the season, he's yet to allow a batter to reach. He gave up an inherited runner, but it was a very weird situation. There was runners on the corners with one out, and the Nats almost turned a great double play, but the runner was safe on review by half a step at first, so the run scored. So unfortunately, he allowed his first inherited runner to score, but he got the very next batter out. So
he got the ground ball that was needed.
Right.
And it just,
yeah, not his fault at all.
Exactly.
It would have been awesome if like he was, I think it was his first pitch too. First pitch ground ball, though, play out of the inning. Like that would have been awesome. But five appearances into the season, he's yet to allow a batter to reach base, 14 up, 14 down, six strikeouts, and only 46 pitches total, 35 of them for strikes. So a great ratio there. He's looked great. And will he keep it up? No, because no reliever has ever gone, you know, on baseless or allowed no base runners in an entire season. So he's going to positively regress. No, I guess it's negatively regress towards the mean. And you know, his mean might be his career average and not his like average of the past two or three years, but he's been exceptional so far this season. So he was, you know, needed to be talked about.
Yeah, I agree with that. He has been a revelation. I mean, I did not know what to expect. And I remember we talked about how, is this some kind of ridiculous retread? I mean, you know, we're just getting the band back together. Why are we bringing all these players back? It seems that Sean Doolittle has something left in the tank. So he said it's not going to last forever with the zero ERA, but yeah, he's been absolutely spectacular so far. And, you know, a guy that you can go to in those, you know, we've talked a lot of times about how the save isn't always in the ninth, you know, sometimes you need somebody who can come in.
And I like him being deployed in the sixth, like right after the starter comes out. Yeah.
I like it.
Makes a lot of sense.
And I think
just a stabilizer.
A team, B team thing he's been doing seems to be working really well. Although I think Doolittle seems to be kind of the floater, if there is one. where he kind of just comes in.
He's the vet.
Any guys situation. Respect him. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And there have been some other really great stories in the bullpen. Arano has been, you know, obviously
he's been good.
Didn't have his very best, you know, outing. Was it yesterday? Or I can't remember if it was game three or game four now, but
I think it was like game two, actually.
Yeah, well, the one where he had his, yeah, maybe you're right. It was game two of the Pirates series, but.
No, it would have been game three. You're right.
Okay. Well, whichever it was, you know, he had, a pretty rough outing on that one, but, you know, a guy who was a non-roster invitee and makes the opening day roster and has actually established himself as a pretty important part of the bullpen. It's a cool story. And so there's other good things going on in the bullpen, but Doolittle is absolutely the best thing going on out there right now, in my opinion.
Actually, we might have to correct ourselves. I'm looking at his stats, and no, he was great all series long. He was 2 2/3, 2 2/3, 2 hits, no walks, no runs, 6 strikeouts. He was great. Finnegan was the one to have a blow up. Murphy had a blow up.
C-Sheck. All right. I stand corrected. Arana was great. All right. Well, so he is another really good story out there. And I always love, you know, everybody loves an underdog story when a guy kind of comes out of nowhere and establishes himself. But Davey clearly is starting to trust him and using him a lot. So
yeah,
he's been good.
Yeah. And that's kind of been his story. Like I think his career ERA is like a 2.84. But he's dealt with so many injuries that he hasn't been able to latch on. So if he's healthy, it seems like he's good. And right now he's healthy and he's good. So hopefully it sticks. Something worth mentioning, though, we're mid-April right now, but we're quickly approaching the end of the month. Come May 1st, the Nats and every team in baseball have to go from 28 players on the roster to 26. So we're currently playing with 2 extra guys right now, and we have a doubleheader tomorrow, so we're going to see a 29th, a third extra guy. So
fascinating. I wonder what they're going to send down.
It seems like one, if not both, will come from the bullpen. I would imagine probably just one comes from the bullpen because of how short these starters have been going. And that means one bench guy is gone too. Also worth mentioning that D'Strange Gordon hit the IL, seemingly COVID related. It has not been confirmed. I know
it was non-COVID illness.
Maybe. I don't know. Not that it is what it is. Like he's sick. So as soon as he gets over that, yeah, best wishes to him. So hopefully he recovers soon. They called up Donovan Casey, which is very interesting because Donovan Casey came over with Josiah Gray and KB Ruiz in the Max Scherzer Trey Turner deal. Mm-hmm. Absolutely raked last year in the minors. Has a tendency to strike out, but has a lot of power, and he plays all 3 outfield positions. So it's a very interesting candidate to call up. Granted, Stevenson's not on the 40-man roster. So Donovan Casey was kind of the next man up if you needed outfield depth. And Adrianza is still on the IL as well. So, you know, Gerardo Parra, Stevenson, not on the 40-man, thankfully. So they had to call up Donovan Casey. He has not played yet. It's been 2 or 3 games, I think 3 games, and he has not played yet.
Interesting to call him up and then not play him.
Yeah, so strange. I didn't love that, but with the doubleheader tomorrow, I imagine we probably see him probably in game 2. So I'm very curious to see him. But I think he has a legitimate shot of forcing his way into the major league club because, again, Robles has not been hitting.
Yeah.
Lane Thomas has really not been hitting. Yadiel has been hitting, but he's not your prototypical outfielder. But again, if you want him in the lineup, you have to put him in the outfield because you have Nelson Cruz occupying the DH spot. But if you wanted a little bit more defensive flexibility, Donovan Casey still provides that because, again, he plays all 3 outfield positions, whereas Yadiel only plays – excuse me, I have the hiccups. Yadiel only plays left field, and even then he doesn't really play left field. He's more of a DH that you have to throw out there in the field. So he has a legitimate shot because, again, if he can hit, he has some strikeout tendencies, but he has a lot of boom tendencies too. So with the defensive versatility and a little bit more upside than seemingly Robles or Thomas have right now, there is a path forward. But again, if they're not going to play him, then, you know, there is no path forward. So I'm curious to see how long that sticks and if it is just until D'Strange Gordon gets back, which might be soon, but it's an IL stint. So I think the IL's, isn't it back to 15 days now?
I think it is. I can't remember. I know they were changing the rules. I have to look up the exact.
So it's at least 10 days, if not 15. Yeah. Right. So we're going to see a little bit of him. So if he gets off to a hot start, it's worth keeping an eye on. But then the Nats would have a decision to make.
Sometimes I wonder if they've called him up to get a look at him before they have to shrink the roster to see.
In theory, I doubt this. They want to do this, but you could send down Lucius Fox. You would have DSG to patrol the infield, but then again, you only have one backup infielder, so they probably won't do that. But it is interesting, but they have to get rid of two guys anyway. So seemingly my bet would have been Austin Voth. I don't know now because he has the history. I think Patrick Murphy's definitely done. And Hunter Harvey was the latest call up. So he's probably the lowest man on the totem pole right now, even though he hasn't gotten much of a sample size here with the big club. But
I'd see Murphy if you're going to send anybody.
Murphy and Voth, but then you're taking away two from your bullpen. But you
I don't think Voth's going to go down. I think they want to see if
they might DFA him. I'm thinking. I don't think he has any more options.
Oh, that's right. He doesn't. I don't know. If it were me making this decision, I think I'd keep him a little bit longer. But
he's also worth mentioning. Tyler Clippard is going to get called up at some point. He has like 4 or 5 AAA appearances, no runs allowed. So they're going to call him up at some point. It was really just a formality putting him in AAA, like get him a couple of spring training appearances, so to speak. They're going
to
call him up.
Clippard in AAA.
They also have to clear space on the 40 man because they claimed an outfielder from the Blue Jays. I believe his name is Joshua Palacios. Immediately comes over, hits 2 home runs. So that's very exciting outfield depth that they didn't have previously. So they would have to clear a spot on the 40 man for Tyler Clippard. They also, if they just speaking on the 40 man, it doesn't really help their current roster go from 28 to 26. They could just DFA Anibal Sanchez too, if they like what they're seeing from Rogers. I doubt they would.
A lot of interesting decisions they have to make
and
in the next
It doesn't even stop there because Jesse Docherty was tweeting about it today. The doubleheader puts the Nats in a precarious position because Josiah Gray was supposed to go tonight. Now he's going tomorrow. And then you don't have a day off till Monday. So because seemingly Gray and Adon are going tomorrow, neither of them would be on their full rest for Saturday. So you're probably going to have to call up someone on Saturday unless you go Espino for one of the starts tomorrow. But then you're kind of hampering your bullpen for the next 6 days until you have another off day. So again, it's a very precarious position. One name that got thrown out there for Saturday start is Aaron Sanchez, who I wouldn't mind seeing because he's a very high upset, low risk, high reward type guy. He's dealt with a lot of blisters and a lot of other injuries, but he was an ERA title winner with the Blue Jays. I think it was 2014. So it was a little bit ago, but the potential's there. Same problem. He's not on the 40 man either. So you would have to DFA someone as well. So it's a very interesting spot for the Nats to be in, and we're going to have to see how these puzzle pieces, not chess moves, whatever analogy you want to use, to see how this roster shakes out, because they do need to get down from 28 to 26 by the end of the month, but also they need to kind of fill some spots before then as well. So there's going to be a lot of roster shuffling over the next 2 weeks.
For sure. And I really hope that they come down on the side of getting the young guys some playing time instead of leaving them down in the minors or letting them go in order to play a bunch of these older veterans who aren't part of the future. I know we've talked about that a ton, but I still fail to understand some of the decisions that the front office is making with who to play and who not to play right now.
Well, that's a good segue. Again, it doesn't help get you from 28 to 26, but it does help your 40 man. If you were to DFA Alcides Escobar, which I don't think would be that big of a hit. And then you could call up Luis Garcia, who was just named the AAA. No, it wasn't
that big of a hit.
because it can't be a pun, because he would have to actually be capable of getting a hit for it to be a pun. But Luis Garcia was just named the AAA player of the week. He absolutely raked. I think he hit .571 over the past week. The defensive liability is still there, but Ryan loves to say if you're hitting, defense does not matter. And right now that's the case with Luis Garcia. If he can come up and hit .280 and, you know, provide some offense, like what's Alcides Escobar hitting, like .080?
Yeah, so, and clearly being a defensive liability is not something that keeps you off this roster. So right. I don't really want to hear anybody complain about Luis Garcia's defense when you can see who else we have.
So one path forward I could see is in the next 2 weeks, if Alcides Escobar, you know, proves to be what we've seen through the first 2 weeks, DFA him, call up Luis Garcia. That clears at least one spot on the 40-man. You can add Tyler Clippard to it, and then, you know, you don't have to necessarily release, you know, Patrick Murphy or Voth. I'm pretty sure Voth is out of options, so you would have to DFA him, and he would have to accept a minor league assignment. But at least gives you a little bit more flexibility. That's another way I see it, you know, playing out, because at that point, Luis Garcia would spend a month in the minors. That's probably less than what they would have wanted. But if he's going to hit like this, then he's going to force your hand to an extent.
Yeah. And he is right now, his slash line for the season so far is .377, .411, .623 with a 1.034 OPS.
Is that good? I mean,
it's pretty good. It's pretty good.
So all of this is just to say that they're going to have a lot of decisions to be made. And it's kind of crazy to be saying that here in mid-April, when you looked at this team on paper at the start of the year. It's like, you know, the decision to be made is like, who the hell do we find? Like, we're just looking for warm bodies at this point. I mean, we're employing Michael Franco and Alcides Escobar, for Christ's sake.
Right. Do you have both a pulse and a social security number? You're hired.
Yeah, you're hired. So it's going to be interesting to see, but I mean, I'm in agreement with you. Not that it's any surprise, but I'm in the camp of letting these young guys play. I will take the boneheaded errors. Like, yes, they suck, and I'm absolutely going to comment on them when they happen. But listen, if he can provide a double here and there, shit, I'll get over it. Like, yep, I am absolutely so tired of these one pitch weak ground ball at bats from Alcides Escobar and these disappearing acts. Mm-hmm. And also,
yeah, and if I have to watch Michael Franco, right? If I have to watch Michael Franco make the errors that he makes on defense, then I can certainly make it through any errors on defense that Luis Garcia might commit. And he is a young guy developing, and so that's fine with me. Watching, you know, veterans past their prime, veterans who shouldn't be on the roster, make those kinds of errors is infuriating.
Yeah, that's for certain. So we'll have to see, but worth talking about now because it's something to keep an eye on. Some of these guys will be playing for their jobs, and it's mid-April.
In the next 2 weeks. Yeah,
for sure. And it's not just isolated to the Nats too. Every team has to go from 28 to 26. So there's going to be, you know, more roster battles going on. But I do like that the MLB kind of implemented this rule to start with a larger roster and then continue to work your way down. I think it makes a lot of sense. I think it makes a lot of sense, you know, to be able to call guys up, you know, on a whim and not have to actually like go through the formal process of calling them up and deal with all the options and stuff. Like, that's what they did with Josh Rogers. So I think it makes a lot of sense, but we'll have to see how it shakes up the Nats roster going forward. But all right, previewing the Diamondback series really quick. We're back at home. We have a 4-game set. Again, the doubleheader tomorrow or today if you're listening to this on release day. So game one tomorrow, Madison Bumgarner is on the mound.
Still to me.
He's a shell of himself, but he is still capable of a good starts. And with the Nats, doesn't really matter who's on the mound. We're going to make him look like Cy Young anyways. Game two. Lucas Gilbert. No, it's Tyler Gilbert. He's been solid this year, he was solid last year, 2-2, 3.15 ERA in 40 innings. So solid. I don't know a lot about him. The Diamondbacks, kind of one of those random teams.
And Wednesday, then it's going to be Adon and Gray, right? In those games, we just don't know in which order yet.
Possibly. If I had to bet, I man. Yeah, I think that's probably what they'll end up doing is they'll still go gray in a dawn. And then Saturday, when you get to it, they'll probably try to save Espino throughout the week so Espino can make a start on Saturday. If I had to put my money down somewhere, that's what I bet they do, is just try to spare Espino so he can go like four innings on Saturday. Because you have an off day Monday and you can kind of reassess then. But it doesn't make sense to throw Espino out there tomorrow and then have him burned definitely for the next like 3 days when you have games.
Yeah.
So that's my guess. So it'll probably be Gray game one as it's supposed to be versus Bumgarner, and then a Don for game two again as it's supposed to be. Game three, you get Fetty versus Zach Davies. So expect a lot of offense in that game. And then game four, you have Josh Rogers versus Zach Gallen. Expectations for the series?
I guess a split. If I had to make a prediction, I mean, these are both bad teams, but obviously we just lost 3 out of 4 to a bad team, and we're worse, I guess, than the Pirates, which is hard to say.
Tough. Yeah,
that's owning up to who we really are right now, which, you know, this team, though, it just comes in flashes. Like, they have some really good games where, you know, the pitching, you get a decent start from your pitcher and then the bullpen is good. And that's the path for a win, because the offense, with a couple of exceptions, has been pretty anemic. You know, their pitching isn't great. So we could see some big offense from, especially the top of the order again. And if the bullpen, you know, if we can get 5 innings out of the starters and get decent performances from the bullpen, as we mostly have been, I think, you know, 2 or possibly 3, I think they'll drop at least one in there. What are you thinking?
I'm probably going to regret this. Nats take 3 of 4. Nice. I think the Diamondbacks starting pitching is pretty good. Not in the grand scheme of things, but I just mean like how it lines up against the Nats. Because the Nats have basically 3 spots in their lineups where they're just giving you out any single game. Mm-hmm. So if you're taking away 9 outs from the game and the Diamondbacks only have to get 18 outs as opposed to 27, you're making their lives a hell of a lot easier. But the Diamondbacks lineup is even worse than the Nats lineup is. And Ketel Marte is by far and away their best player, and he's not hitting right now all that well. So I think if the Nats starter, like Gray, continues to have a good start, Adon bounces back, Fetty just do what he does, right? And Josh Rogers have that similar start to kind of what we've been seeing, like a very Fetty-esque start. There is a pathway, and, you know, account for one of the Nats, you know, Nats gonna Nat type games in there. They lose one. I think they can win 3, but that's not saying this team's gonna be good. That's just saying you're playing the Diamondbacks.
Right.
So I'm going to say they win 3 of 4.
I
felt that
way about the Pirates series too. I thought they would win 3 of 4. And then
that makes a little bit more sense though, because you played for like 11 days straight to start the season. But yeah, Now with the off day today, I'm hoping that gives everyone a little bit more rest. This was kind of like a travel day because they came back from Pittsburgh yesterday, and Pittsburgh's not too far away, but came back from Pittsburgh yesterday and then had an off day today. And then, yeah, they'll play 2 tomorrow, but then they get an off day the following Monday. So they can kind of reset a little bit. I think they start strong, and then we'll talk about the Giants series on the next episode, but I think they get swept by the Giants. So
yeah, I think that's
It all balances out, but I'm going to say they take 3 of 4 from the Diamondbacks. The Diamondbacks are really, really bad.
They are. And if there's one stat that I was reading when I was preparing for the show tonight, was that they have a batting average on the road so far this season, the Diamondbacks, of 175. So
higher than Alcides Escobar
and Richter Robles.
My God.
Yeah. All right. Well, it should be a fun series. I mean, again, we're watching for, like we talked about in this episode, we're watching for the good things, and you know, the results truly don't matter. It's not like they're going to compete this season. So, you know, just take them as they come and enjoy the baseball, and hopefully we'll see some good stuff out of Josh Bell and Juan Soto to make the series.
Yeah, I have high hopes for the pitching. I'm really hoping the pitching comes through, because as we've seen when the Nats have been competitive this year, it's because of the pitching. So if the Nats are going to win these games, it's going to be because the pitching feasts on that terrible Diamondbacks lineup and not because the offense goes off. The offense could go off because any one of these pitchers, especially Zach Davies, could blow up. But I think, you know, if the 10 game or 9 game sample size tells us anything, it's going to be the pitching that keeps us competitive. So I have high hopes for the pitching.
If they're ever going to have a great series, it ought to
right,
be
this one. this is the time to do it. All right, so that does it for the Nats preview and recap and all that stuff. We'll be back on Thursday to preview the Giants series as well as recap the Diamondback series in this NL West homestand swing. But before we get out of here, we're going to end the show the way we always do with our one big thing. Amanda, what do you got? No,
you're
hockey.
Gonna love this. It's hockey. You're going to love it. The Cavs made the playoffs.
Why?
For those like, of you who aren't paying attention, because it annoys you. Season. I know. I do it because it annoys you.
And there's so much baseball stuff to talk about.
I know. We just talked about baseball stuff for an hour. I could talk about hockey stuff for 1 minute.
We talked one team out of the 30.
Anyway, I'll try not to interrupt you when you do your one big thing. I just want to point out.
You interrupted me every other part of the show.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I saw a tweet earlier from Brian McNally, which I loved and thought everybody needs to know. When we all get very frustrated with the Caps, those of us who are Caps fans, there's been a lot of first round exits over the years, but they have made the playoffs 32 of the past 39 years, which I think is an unbelievable stat that I wanted to make sure you all know about. So there you go. That's my one big thing. The Caps are in the playoffs again. Improbable Stanley Cup run incoming.
They are going to get smacked so hard by the Panthers.
The Panthers are gonna just wreck them.
It's gonna hurt my soul to watch them get smacked by the Panthers. And also know any goal that Ovi scores does not count towards his total. Like, that's going to suck.
I know. You know what? That's a part of it I hadn't even considered. But
yeah, it's gonna suck because then typically it's like, oh, Caps lose, but Ovi scores. Now it's Caps lose, Ovi scores, but it doesn't count. So it just gets worse and worse.
That's a very good point. All right. Yep. What's your one big thing?
I'm going to take it back to what we started the show with and talk about broadcasting a little bit, because I heard it was a small clip from the Dodgers game. I know it's Oral Hershiser. I don't know who his partner is. I'm trying to stall while I look it up. there was a really funny back and forth with Julio Urias's start the other night, and he was coming out, or well, he was in the bullpen, or sorry, in the dugout trying to, I'm terrible at multitasking. It is Joe Davis and I believe Oral Hershiser is the Dodgers crew, but they were examining Julio Urias as he's in the dugout. Weren't sure if Dave Roberts was going to send him back out there or if he was done. So they were literally just watching him. The camera was on him. And Urias takes a drink of water. And I believe it was Oral Hershiser goes, you know, just look at that swig of water. That doesn't look like a swig of water that tells you he's coming out of the game. And it is kind of just like them going back and forth, like really analyzing every single mannerism that Julio Urias is doing. And that's then terrific. Urias is just kind of just like walking around the dugout, no jacket on or anything like that. But then he goes up to a teammate and fist bumps him and they both go, ah. And I think Hershiser goes, ah, misread the swig. And it's just like it's the little shit like that. Right. It's the little shit like that where it's just, I mean, that just gold and just goes to show you what a good broadcast team can do. But it was awesome. Like Hershiser was like bump. He's like, I got to get better about reading my swigs. Like I gotta know what a competitive swig looks like. It was just like really, really funny. So it just goes back to the broadcasting thing. Like, you know, you appreciate good broadcasting when you see it. So I just thought that was really funny. I wanted to mention that because I love those audio clips that just go viral. I mean, we could talk about the Yankees radio guy who thinks every time Giancarlo Stanton hits a ball, it's a home run, but it turns out to be a warning track out. Like that's dynamite too, but for the wrong reasons, unless you're not a Yankees fan.
No. Yeah. So. Well, those are sometimes they're unintentionally funny, but the Oral Hershiser one was intentionally funny. So
that's... Yeah, no, that one was good because they were like, look at that swig. Does that look like a swig of a guy who's coming out of the game? I don't think so. And then they see the fist
sometimes
bump.
You've got dead air to fill. What are you going to do?
Right. And then they see the fist bump. They're like, ah, misread the swig. Oh, it was funny. It was good stuff.
That was awesome.
But
awesome.
Speaking of good stuff, we will be back on Thursday with another episode recapping the Diamondback series. I guess it won't be over yet, but recapping the three games that had been played to that point and previewing the Giants series as well. But in the meantime, be sure to check us out on Twitter at Half Street High Heat and at halfstreethighheat.com. We got content coming out every single day talking about the Nats and just everything baseball related, including Monty, who's been killing it with the college baseball and prospect talk. The amateur update is, I mean, it's electric. It's must consume.
You're into college baseball
content.
You have to listen.
Yeah. I mean, you legitimately learn. Like, we do some episodes here at Half Street High Heat where you probably don't learn a thing, but with the amateur update, you're learning something every single episode, but it's like fun learning. It's not like that, you know, homeschool type learning that Amanda teaches. It's not boring. This is fun learning that Monty does. So be sure to check out the amateur update as well as all the shows on our Patreon. Amanda show Pitch Perfect will have its second episode this week, most likely. Yes. Matt had a 5-2 record gambling last week through the Pickoff, which is the Half Street High Heat gambling show. We're kind of tinkering with the format of that. That's probably going to be more article based. So you'll have to have access to the Patreon to see the picks, but we'll include some podcasts here and there. So you get some audio content as well as like betting strategies there. And then the Half Street High Heat Fantasy Hour with myself and CK. Right now we're still one episode a week. We'll probably go to two episodes a week as we get into the dog days of summer and, you know, in the important part of the fantasy baseball season as well. So still great content on the Half Street High Patreon. So check out patreon.com/halfstreethighheat. $10 a month gets you everything. Or if you don't want to do all of that, that's perfectly fine. There's plenty of mix and match options as well for you that are more cost effective for your wallet. So be sure to check that out. And obviously check out the Half Street High Heat YouTube channel. Hit that bell, subscribe. Trey killing it with YouTube videos. He has some great stuff in the works. Cannot wait to see that when it airs. All right, Amanda, you got anything else before we head out?
No, just make sure you're checking out the OG website as well. Lots and lots of great articles there. And
I said that. I promoted
did
it.
I missed that one when we were doing
there's just so much to talk about now. It seems like I don't, but that was one of the first things I said.
Yeah, they're definitely, you know, visit every day because there's always new stuff. And you can keep up with the Nats. I know this time of the year, I sometimes it's hard to like get back into the rhythm of baseball every day. So it's easy to miss stuff. So if you miss anything, you know, make sure you check out all the various and sundry things that are available from Half Street High Heat, because we will keep you up to date.
Big word. All right. But again, be sure to follow the show on Twitter at Half Street High Heat, Amanda at AWhite7877, and myself at The Coach Moose. We appreciate you listening. We will be back on Thursday. And in the meantime, let's go Nats.
There's a new breeze blowing off the banks of the Potomac. A new team's mowing down the ranks of their opponents. The Nationals are smashing balls so that the commentator who has the calls has passed the wall to see you later. Let's go Nats. We've got a game to play. We're gonna win today. Let's go. By the early light of dawn, well, you can see they're running scared, cause the kinds of bombs we're launching are bursting in the air. Tell the Library of Congress that they might not want to look, cause we're putting curly W's in every book. Let's go Nats. We've got a game to play. We're gonna win today. Let's go. Senator, we're shredding the competitors. We're set to send the power.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.